And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, we sat through the impeachment number two. It was very interesting, I thought. It had a lot of lessons. It has a lot of implications. The first question is, should they have bothered? I mean,
of course they should.
Why should they? Why should they have bothered?
Of course they should have bothered. There's a thing called Constitution. There's a thing called the rule of law. This was an insurrection against the government. It was an attempt. Initiated, instituted, and supported and boosted by Donald Trump to overturn the results of the election and to undo the votes of 81 million people because his ego and psychosis would not allow him to recognize that he had lost. And the fact is that if we are going to have a country that has rules and a constitution, this needed to be done. The problem was that we live in a world where one political party that used to be a great political party that used to tout its ancestry back to its first president, Abraham Lincoln, has lost its moral pinnings. It's lost its reason for being. It's lost its ideals and whatever it stood for. You know, Lincoln fought a civil war in order to protect and preserve the Union under the Constitution. This party essentially said the Constitution doesn't matter anymore. All that matters is that we get to continue and perpetuate our dominion no matter what the voters say.
So, and do you think that the presentation by the impeachment managers was able to teach the lesson to the country that the Republicans are constitutionally unable to uphold the Constitution?
I think that that lesson was there. I think that one of the reasons for doing this was to put out in a concise form, and let's give plaudits to those people that did this on behalf of the Democrats, those representatives. Let's give props to Nancy Pelosi for picking these folks and putting them on the committee, and for Jamie Raskin to lead it.
I thought Raskin was terrific.
Rask, they all were.
Joe Neguse was a real star.
He was a real star, and so was Stacey Plaska.
Yes.
The others were no shrinking violets either. And, you know, up till now, there's been a lot said about the leadership of the Democratic Party and how old and decrepit it had become. You know, Nancy Pelosi's 80, Steny Hoyer's 78. Jim Clyburn is no youngster. On the Senate side, you had Pat Leahy, who was 86, was presiding over the Senate. Dianne Feinstein, they're talking about her being forgetful. She's 86. Things like that. And the Republicans had the firebrands going. The crazies, but their firebrands were much younger. And all of a sudden, you started seeing people who have real leadership and real ability and who are much younger in the Democratic Party. And I think they give us a hope for the future.
Well, what's your judgment? Was it worth it?
Well, yeah, it was worth it because don't forget, there's a lot of people that really don't pay attention to this stuff. They think they're low information voters. They don't like politics and they don't like really know or hear things. And what came out in this and the way they presented it in a concise form was tremendous. It was a tight presentation. It showed the absolute dangers the people were in, that the vice president of the United States was almost captured and could have been murdered by this crowd. But they were yelling, "Hang Mike Pence," at the behest of Donald Trump. And at the end, the thing that came out on Friday night was Trump's utter indifference to what was happening to Pence, even to the minority leader, McCarthy, who was calling up the White House and saying, "You've got to do something. We're under siege here. Mike Pence is being threatened." And all Trump could think about was perpetuating his lie. "Well, you know, you don't care as much about the vote that I do." You know, it also showed the fact that the Republicans in Congress, contrary to the Democrats, were gutless. I mean, McCarthy showed no leadership at all. He had no backbone at all. He wouldn't stand up in public, he wouldn't stand up to Trump. He wouldn't stand up for Pence. He wouldn't stand up for his members that were endangered. He wouldn't stand up for his staff that was endangered, and he wouldn't stand up for those brave police officers that were endangered. That's what this showed, that the Republicans wouldn't stand up when the going got rough. And I think the public could see that. Now, that's going to take some time to play out over time as the effects of this go on. And there's a lot of things that are going to happen. You know, the Biden administration wanted to, I think, rough up Trump a little bit. They would have been fine if they'd been convicted. But they needed to get on with their agenda. And what they found out is that the Republicans, and I think Biden has indicated he knows this, aren't going to be very helpful. No matter what they think or what they say, they're going to stick together to try to scuttle the majority from leading the country. You know, I saw one statistic that the 57 senators that voted yes on conviction represented over 76 million more Americans than the 43 senators that voted no. That's almost a quarter of the country more. Talk about representing the majority. That's it. But of course, the Republicans don't care about majority rule. They just care about minority rule.
Well, that's the point. I mean, doesn't all of this call into question the entire American democratic system and the entire electoral system? I mean, all of this was to defend the electoral system, but the electoral system does a terrible job in representing the people. You can't claim it's one person, one vote. It's not. You can't claim that working people are represented adequately. They're not. The thing is rigged. It is. Elections are rigged. How many millionaires sit in the House of Representatives? A lot, right?
Well, the Senate especially is mostly millionaires. You probably can't name more than a handful that aren't.
Even Bernie Sanders is a millionaire.
Yes. Well, he doesn't want people to know that, but he is.
But I mean, I'll grant you, okay, it's not what money you have, it's what is in your head, what you try to represent, who you try to represent. You might have a lot of money, but you genuinely are devoted to the interests of the disadvantaged. I can see that. There are such people.
Well,
not in Congress, not for the most part.
Well, the Roosevelts and the Kennedys were millionaires, and they were more devoted to the working man and woman.
Right. And Roosevelt, wasn't he attacked for being a traitor to his class, remember?
That's correct.
Traitor to his class.
Yes.
So, but the plain fact of the matter is, you got to be rich. You got to be able to assemble millions of dollars. If you're not rich, at least you got to know people who are rich. If you're not rich and you don't know people who are rich, you got to be part of an organization that can do crowdsourcing. Ocasio-Cortez is not rich. She's a worker, but she belongs to an organization that can do fundraising.
Right.
But most of these people in politics, all the Republicans for sure, are people who go into it because they think of it as their private business.
Yes.
And they run it like a private business. And for that, you got to be rich.
Yeah, well, you saw it, and it finally backfired in Georgia, where you had Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue doing insider trading type of activities.
Right, based on what they learned in committee hearings that they were privy to, that were secret hearings, they went out and traded on that.
Yeah. Richard Byrd.
By the way, didn't the secretary, Trump's Secretary of Agriculture, did that?
Yeah.
And he had to quit.
Well, his whole cabinet, you know.
They all did.
Yeah, you know, Wilbur Ross, who
Wilbur
might have
Ross
been the
did
richest.
It, never stopped doing it.
Right, even though he pledged that he would.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And, of course, Mitch McConnell's wife, the Secretary of Transportation.
Right, whose family owns a shipping company.
Yeah, she saw that they were well taken care of.
Yeah.
The trick that Donald Trump was able to pull was, to, despite all of these rich people in the Republican Party and them doing favors for the rich, he still had people thinking that he was like Roosevelt, the rich guy that really cared about the poor. He didn't care about any of these guys. He stuck it to the poor whenever he could. He stuck it to his employees.
He was able to get away with it because until Sanders came along, the Democrats threw in the towel on standing up for workers' rights and workers' interests. So he grabbed it and ran with it.
Right.
That's what happened.
Right. I mean, there was a lot of crossover Sanders to Trump voters.
That's exactly right.
There were a lot of Sanders to Trump voters. In that regard, the Democrats had lost their way for a long time.
Lost their way since Clinton's time.
Well,
it was the Clinton people, the New Democratic people.
Well, Clinton felt he needed to do that in order to get elected. Remember, they'd been out of power for three Republican.
Isn't it the Christians who say something about what is it profiteth a man if he gaineth the world and loseth his soul? So he got elected.
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah. Well, the Republicans certainly lost their soul here.
No, they didn't lose their soul. They never had it. They were unabashedly oppressors of the people. They make no bones about it. Trump makes no bones about being a racist.
No, he doesn't. By the way, you know, we're going to see, because already people start talking about the next round of elections. One of the states that's going to be in play is Ohio, and it looks like the Democrats are going to run, or if he gets through the primary, they're going to run a Sherrod Brown clone. I mean, Sherrod Brown has basically the same message as Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
But he declined to run for president. They're going to run Tim Ryan out there, who sounds a lot like Sherrod Brown in terms of working people. And
you know, I wouldn't put too much money on him. I remember his campaign in the primaries. He's a strict, a standard AFL-CIO type, building trades type. He's for defending the union guys who belong to his union. He does not have an encompassing vision of all workers. That's not his concern. His concern is who belongs to my union. He's not a union guy, but you know what I mean. He's a very, very tunnel vision guy. He is not a progressive by any means. If he's a Sherrod Brown clone, then Sherrod Brown has been fooling a lot of people. He's not like Sherrod Brown.
Well, then he might have fooled me.
I think he has fooled you. You, for example, you can't compare him to Stacey Abrams.
No.
No possibility. No possibility.
You know,
if Stacey Abrams were running in Ohio, you'd say, oh, she's like Sherrod Brown. And it's true. They share a lot of policy points, but not this guy Ryan, Tim Ryan.
Well, Stacey Abrams came out this week with an op-ed, co-authored an op-ed in the New York Times about how the Democrats should run the party successfully.
Wait, before you get to that, I wanted to make one point
about
this impeachment business.
Okay.
Because, you know, right after McConnell voted not to convict, he made a very stirring speech on the floor of the House, of the Senate, in which he basically backed all the charges that the impeachment managers put against Trump. He went down the line and said, this guy did this, but we shouldn't have tried him. That's unconstitutional. Now, the fact is, this process has rules. The first thing they did was they voted on what will they consider and what will they not consider. The Republicans said, we can't consider anything because it's unconstitutional because he's not a sitting president. They voted on it. They agreed that it would be settled by a vote. They voted on it. All the Democrats and some Republicans, five of them, voted, of course we can try it. It doesn't matter that he's not a sitting president while we're having the trial. And they had a raft of legal opinions that pointed out that both the history and the language of the Constitution says you can do it. So well, that set the stage for the hearing, for the trial.
Right.
During the trial, CNN reporters pointed out that at least 15 of the senators on the Republican side didn't bother to come in. They just absented themselves. And many of the ones who did come in and paid attention to what was going on didn't pay attention. They were reading, they were doing crossword puzzles, they were doing whatever, but they were very ostentatiously not paying attention. Then, when they were asked to vote, they said, well, it's unconstitutional. Raskin said, hey, we already settled that matter. But the Republicans, and Mitch McConnell in the lead, said, we don't care. We don't. If we lose a vote, we don't feel we're bound by the vote. We are only you are bound by the vote when we win the vote, but we are not bound by the vote when we lose the vote. Now, under what circumstances can these people be upholding the Constitution? In what argument is there that says that they've lived up to their oath to uphold the Constitution, which is a structure of rules?
Yeah. Well, that's because this is not a formal court proceeding. It's a political proceeding.
But even in politics, I belong to an association. We say, okay, we got Robert's Rules of Order, the majority rules. Yeah. It's okay. We take a vote. You lose. You say, okay, I lost. I'm going to go do it anyway. I don't care.
Yeah, but don't forget, in politics, it's basically what you can get away with.
In politics, is power.
Yeah.
There's no justice here, right? There's no logic here. There's no justice here. There's not even any rules here. It's naked power, and I think that's what the Republicans demonstrated.
Yeah. Let me make a point. One of the Republican defenses is you can't try a president after he's out of office. But the Constitution talks about impeaching the president, and he was impeached while he was in office.
Right.
So it was a legal impeachment, and the only reason he wasn't tried is Mitch McConnell delayed the Senate coming back into session until after Trump was out of office.
That's right. And then you had this lying lawyer. What's his name? Van Devine?
Yeah.
Michael Van Devine? He was barely competent, but B, he was a liar.
Yeah. And in a real court, he'd be facing sanctions by the judge. But again, this is not a real court proceeding.
And the other lawyer dropped out altogether in the middle of the case, right? Schoen.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just didn't come back. He just dropped out.
Yeah. And of course, this is what happens when Donald Trump doesn't want to pay lawyers for good lawyering, or where good lawyers don't want to represent him. I mean, he couldn't get Dershowitz. He couldn't get Sekulow. He couldn't get Cipollone, the guy who got him off the first time. You know, as you said, this is as we said, it's a political exercise. And it was, I guess, what McConnell tried to cover his tracks afterwards. But don't forget, this thing is not over yet. There still could be, McConnell basically said what Trump did was criminal, that he incited an insurrection. And you have the D.C. District Attorney investigating that. Charges could be brought in D.C. And if criminal charges aren't brought, you could have civil charges brought against Trump by the people who are injured, the Capitol Police, the family of the Capitol policeman who was killed, the policeman who's lost his eye. All of those people can try to bring charges in a civil court where the standards are lower. It's just more likely than not, rather than beyond a reasonable doubt. And they could say, hey, look, we made the link here. This was done at your request and your behalf. We have tape of you saying, go to the Capitol and fight.
And you've got tapes of 200 people arrested, nearly all of whom have said, I was there because Trump told me to go. I was answering the call of my commander.
Exactly. Now, there's also troubles for Trump down in Georgia. The funny part there is that the Republicans are in charge, but they could bring charges on him on trying to tamper with the election after the fact. As a matter of fact, Lindsey Graham could also be in trouble down there. So Trump could be kept pretty busy over the next several years on those things as well.
So who among the Republicans, if Trump, did Trump win? He got acquitted. Did he win?
Yes and no.
Don Jr. says big victory, 2-0.
Yeah, but everything there is. You know, what really amazed me, though, was the votes of certain people in the Republican Party who had a chance to knock Donald Trump out of the 2024 race. They want to run it themselves. Tom Cotton, Marco Rubio.
Yeah, but they got a problem. Bruce. They can't turn on Trump and expect that his people will vote for them. They're in an impossible situation. Their best hope is that Trump has a heart attack.
Yeah. Or he gets convicted by somebody else.
Well, yeah, something, right.
Yeah, but you know, if they'd had a backbone, they wouldn't be in that position. They wouldn't care. We already know that neither Rubio nor Ted Cruz would stand up to Trump in 2016, despite all the bad things he said about them.
Cruz said Trump is an unmitigated liar. Every time he moves his lips, he lies. That's what he said. Those were his words.
Yeah. Well, Lindsey Graham had bad words to say about Trump as well.
Yeah.
You know, of course, Lindsey Graham, I think, had something to say about Ted Cruz, wasn't it? That if he committed murder on the floor, if someone had murdered him on the floor of the Senate, you couldn't get enough votes to convict?
Yeah, if the trial was in the Senate, he'd be acquitted, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So exactly anyway, right. In that regard... So these things are going to sort themselves out. Meanwhile,
so you figure that Cotton and Rubio and Hawley, yeah. they lost.
They lost. And now I think we're going to get back to focusing on the job of governance, and the Democrats are going to have to come through and realize that they're not going to get any Republican support. They're going to have to either get rid of the filibuster or put things through with reconciliation. They've got a big agenda. They've got certain big things. First of all, they should be passing the...
They can't get rid of the filibuster. They don't have the votes. Sinema and Manchin said they won't vote to get rid of the filibuster. They don't have the votes.
So they're going to have to do things with reconciliation the most possible. But they're going to have to put pressure on about trying to pass the new Voter Rights Act. They've got to fix the post office. So if you saw this week, DeJong said he's going to do more to... Matt Cartwright called it sabotage.
Why can't they get rid of that guy?
Well, because Biden can't fire him. Only could be fired by the board of directors. Now, Biden has appointed several people to the board. There's 9 people. He's appointed 4, and he's hoping to get one more vote, fire the guy. Because what he wants to do is cut service and raise rates. They got to stop that.
What he wants to do is get rid of the post office.
Yeah, sure he does. Because he runs a private postal service.
Exactly.
And so Biden's got to show he can do those things. Meanwhile, he's been doing pretty good on getting vaccines out by the millions. So we'll see what happens there. But, you know, we were going to talk about Stacey Abrams and how that all plays into what's coming up politically.
Well, if you can, maybe in 2 minutes or a minute and a half, tell what she wrote. What was her argument?
Well, her argument was essentially a lot of what you and I have been saying over these past several years, that Democrats have to have a different approach to winning. My big points are that you have to think long term, and you have to have a cohesive message, and you have to be able to communicate that message, and you have to understand other people, and you have to play offense. That you cannot just sit there and let the Republicans or hope the Republicans self-defeat, that you have to be aggressive in this. And what you've been saying, and the key to Stacey Abrams, what she's saying, is you have to organize. It's granular. You have to start from the bottom up and build and build and build an infrastructure.
And she talks about 10-year plans.
Yeah, well, that's long term.
Yeah. And she talks about you start out by losing better.
Yeah.
You're going to lose, but you try to narrow your loss.
It's
She points out that you don't go into elections without having first had some sort of mass organizing so people trust you.
Right.
And plus, you have to know what people want and need.
Right.
You have
listening.
To be able to. And even though people need something, if they don't want it, they're not going to support it.
No. And right now, the Democrats are up. You know what we mentioned last week? Biden's idea of bipartisanship isn't that I'm going to get Republican votes. It's that both Democrats and Republicans across the country, the average voter, want these things that the Democrats are proposing. Almost everything in the Democrats' plan has at least 60% approval, and some of it has up to 80% approval.
But that's right, but they don't have the votes.
They've
got to finagle. At this point, they have to finagle it. So in order to get some of this stuff done through the reconciliation process, what he's proposing to do is to cut Medicare. His theory is that when it comes to refinancing Medicare, the Republicans will not be able to stand away from it. They'll have to refinance it. So even though he cuts it today in order to pay for the other thing, they're in a box. They'll have to go along with him then. So he's going to be able to do it.
That's playing with fire.
It's playing with fire. That's right.
It's playing with fire. But he
may have no choice, but you got to realize what's going on here.
Yeah. But he's been bold so far in his appointments. He's been bold. And in his approach, I saw Richard Trumka, the head of the AFL-CIO, saying that he thought Biden made a mistake on getting rid of the pipeline on the first day. That he should have paired that up with creating jobs elsewhere.
Well, that's the point. If you take a pro-worker approach, you can't put workers out of work. It's true, the pipeline sucks. It shouldn't be built. It's a danger to humanity. But the workers have to have jobs, so find something for them to do so that they support getting rid of the pipeline.
Which means he's got to get his infrastructure bill out
all
quickly.
Right. Well, okay.
And that gets those unions back.
Yeah.
And but he also wanted the environmentalist vote, and he's been bold on that. So we'll have to see.
But
how
there's
how
no
that plays
reason
out.
Why environmentalists and working people should be at loggerheads, because
correct.
Working people have the most to gain from the environmentalist program, but working people have to have their income secured.
Sure.
I mean, if you're prepared to give money to banks because they're too big to fail. Why isn't the entire working class of the United States too big to go broke?
Well, that's it. That's it. I mean, this week we had another bad jobs report. This is still the Trump economy.
Oh, yeah.
At this point. At some point, it's got to turn into the Biden economy. It usually takes up to 6 months. I think his window is far shorter than that. I think by March, April 15th, the tax deadline, he's got to show some things that are turning around. But almost 800,000 more people filed for unemployment again. That was another thing that Trump was able to do, was bamboozle people that he was great for jobs. He wasn't. He's the only president to lose jobs in the last 80 years.
Yep, that's right. He was a strikeout on every front. Every front.
Yeah. And don't forget, he lost.
Except on his own personal corruption. He managed to do pretty good on that.
Right. He lost the House. He lost the Senate. He lost the presidency.
Yep.
That's in one four-year term. That's an awful lot.
And he got a bunch of lawyers who were not Lincoln's lawyers.
Oh, losers of the first degree. It was shameful how bad their performance was, as opposed to the Democrats.
But the Democrats have to hammer it home. Everybody has to hammer it home. He was convicted before the bar of history. He may not have been convicted by these 43 Republican senators, but he doesn't escape the bar and the judgment of history. He's killed 400,000 Americans because of not paying attention to the coronavirus. He destroyed the economy, and he tried to destroy the political system.
And he ruined foreign relations as well.
Yeah. Well, let's talk more about Stacey Abrams and what it would mean in Pennsylvania next week.
Yep. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody.
Happy Lincoln's birthday. Happy President's Day.
And, it's a shame if you considered to consider Donald Trump in the same breath as Abe Lincoln.
You can't. You shouldn't.
No.
See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.